Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. You are busting your butt trying to eat well, trying to take care of yourself, and trying to reach your sustainable fat loss goal. But what do you do when your spouse or your partner just doesn't get it? Maybe they are unsupportive. And what about when you have picky eaters as kids? How can you work towards your big, powerful goal while helping to recruit your family, asking them to join you on this journey along the way? I often get questions from one-on-one nutrition coaching clients asking how they can recruit their family and make this a family-friendly process so that they're not pursuing their goals in isolation. That is exactly why I've invited Desi onto the podcast today. Desi is a rock star nutrition coach who works with men, dads, husbands who have poured so much of themselves into their businesses, into their work, their careers, into their families, and now they realize I need to pour some of that time, some of that energy into me. And in today's episode, we're talking about how you can help to encourage your spouse to join you on your journey, but also how you can encourage your children and teach your children how to eat healthy, well-balanced meals without encouraging disordered eating down the road. This is an invaluable podcast episode today. You need to listen to it. In fact, listen to it and share it with another mom, another woman who is trying her best and is ready to bring her family along for the ride. As always, if you love what you hear today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe because, friends, there is more of this goodness coming at you. So Desi, let's dive right in. I know you very well, although not as well as I hope to get to know you throughout the course of today's podcast episode. But for those tuning in, this is going to be such an impactful podcast episode for them. But before we dive into the nitty gritty, tell us, who are you and what do? And what type of individuals do you work with?
Absolutely. So I've worked on this pitch before and I always get really giddy when I describe myself because there's been such a really great transformation. So I am a proud husband, a proud father, and then a proud online entrepreneur, sports dietitian for Major League Baseball, and a huge family person. And a lot of who I work with right now is just who I work with myself, essentially. I work with new dads and I work with men and empowering men, which is a huge reason why I've been really navigating this huge purpose behind men of purpose, because I really want to be able to empower men, not only just to be really great fixtures in their families, but just for themselves, because that's something that I often find that goes by the wayside, is these men will care for their families first, they'll care for their careers, but they forget themselves, which really resonates with me because that's how it used to be. But becoming a husband and a father has absolutely transformed my life for the better.
I love that. And your ideal client, Desi, when they start working with you, are they coming on board with a goal of, hey, help me juggle all of this? Like, I don't know how to make time for myself. Or are they coming on board with a goal of weight loss? Like, what do you help them achieve? What's your superpower?
So, I mean, I would say most guys are coming to me with like, all right, man, like, I'm part of the dad bod crowd. Like, I hate it. I can't do this anymore. Like, I know I can't get back into my 20s, but like, I just want to feel better. But the more that we dive into it, I've been really fortunate to work some really fantastic men who have just gotten down to really what it was. And yeah, they wanted to improve their body composition, but it came back to like, Des, teach me how to be a better man, how to be a better father, a better husband to my wife. Just teach me to love myself. And overall, like to hear a guy say that out loud is really empowering, because I don't know, Nicole, how you feel about this, but I feel like most men, especially in this space, there isn't a whole lot of vulnerability exercised, but it is really fantastic to hear them go from like, yeah, I want to feel better about my body to like, I just want to like love myself more. And I think that's something that doesn't get to, it's not navigated a whole lot, especially with men.
Mm, yeah, I agree. There's a lot of stigma around vulnerability when it comes to any type of male population. So I love that you're helping men kind of to open up that line of communication and say, hey, I'm here to help you. It's okay that you're struggling with this. I have been there. Let's take this road together. I think that is truly amazing. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
So Desi, I imagine a lot of what you do is built upon a firm foundation of accountability. These men of purpose begin working with you because they just need someone in their corner and they need someone to kind of help them guide their next steps. And a lot of the women that I work with initially invest in coaching for the same reason. They feel like they're doing it alone. They're not really sure how to navigate the world of this diet or this prescriptive program. And maybe they don't even have a supportive home life or a spouse that really gets where they're trying to go. And so they invest in a coach who can be that person in their corner. Do you work with clients who struggle finding that support system at home in their lives? Is that something that you help them to build and create?
Yeah, because it's always something that I ask about first. And, you know, one of my favorite questions to ask when I'm first getting on the phone is to have them tell me about your family or tell me about your family dinner table, right? And so that gives me a little bit more information as to whether or not they have family dinners, whether or not they're having, you know, believe it or not, some marital problems. And so that question right there gives me a bigger look into, okay, what is the supportive function in the household? And that's something that I really work on with my clients because I'm a huge person and this has been really huge in my life too. Like I need to work within a team. I need to be able to feed off that energy. And a lot of the men that I work with want the same thing. And so not only do we set them up with the support system with the team of people that we have within our nutrition coaching group, but at the same time, I'm also teaching them just more healthy communication with their spouse to have their spouse jump on board to just being a bigger support system. Because as we all know, you know, when we work with an individual, we're also working within their circle of trust, if you will. And so I try to navigate what they're working with in regards to what's at home, what's available to them, and then really empowering them just to seek further support outside of our team as well.
Mm, yes, I can resonate with that so much. So in the Nutrition Coaching with Nicole group, we call it our squad. It's basically the inner circle. You have like-minded individuals who are pursuing similar goals, and they're there for you, whether you're struggling on a weekend or maybe you're not feeling like you get that support from your inner circle. You have it in this awesome squad of women, and it sounds like your men of purpose work similarly.
Yeah.
Tell us, and this is something that when I knew you were coming on the podcast, I reached out to my one-on-one rock stars and I said, hey, Desi is awesome at working with men. And I know that some of you are trying to get your husbands on board and, you know, kind of build them as part of your support team. What do you suggest, Desi, if someone is working towards a goal and they feel like, man, my spouse just isn't on the same page. I feel like I'm the healthy one. I'm the one trying to eat well and exercise and take care of my body. And my children maybe see this opposite kind of dynamic where it's a yin and a yang. Like, oh, dad's the one who likes eating chips on the couch, but mom's the one who likes going to the gym. Like, what do you suggest when someone's trying to encourage their spouse?
Gosh, that's really hard because there's a couple things at play, especially in my experience. And a lot of that has to do with a couple proponents that are really important. So one is communication and verbiage. So if let's say in this case, if a woman is trying to get her husband or her significant other on board, the way in which you present your concern matters. So let me give you an example. So some of that might be, hey, honey, I'm really concerned with our health. I would really love to do this together. What do you think about not eating chips on the couch and sitting at the table and actually having a snack? Because I'm learning these other really great nutrition things and I think that we could really connect with it, right? So that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is like when you're speaking to your kids, like all dad does eat chips on the couch anyway, like your dad doesn't care, like, you know, and really bringing in the shame component. So right off the bat, you know, especially in my perspective, getting them on board is going to be nearly impossible because you've already shamed them. So, and regardless of how much men really want to relate to this, there is a really proven fact behind just verbiage and more supportive communication. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, and this is what I really like to do, is getting together and involving them as much as possible. Because if you've married this person, if you're dating this person, if you've had kids with this person, you are like-minded individuals in that at some point you connected. And so being able to have like goal talks, and that's something that I like to do with my clients. You know, if I sense that their support system is not as strong as it should be, I actually invite the spouse on the call and we talk about it together, because I think getting them connected with their overall purpose is huge, especially from a family perspective. And so I always try to bring that in the mix so that everyone's on the same page. Cause what I hate is that, like, that telephone game of telling my client something like, okay, relay that to your partner. It never goes well. I mean, I do that all the time and I always mess up communication with my wife.
I can hear you. Yeah. I think that happens a lot. Communication is key, and not just what we're saying, but maybe how we're saying it too, like our tonality and maybe the suggestiveness behind our words. I think we can all relate to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I do love what you said about making your partner a part of your action plan. And I think a lot of the time, my most successful clients will plan menus, or they'll talk about, hey, I was thinking we could eat out maybe two or three times this week instead of four or five times this week. What do you think? Like, how do you feel about that? What meals mean the most to you? I think those clients are so much more successful because they are looping in their cheerleaders, their partners from the beginning. And then it's almost like opening up the power of choice to your spouse and to your partner, instead of it coming across like, hey, I'm doing this and I need you to get behind it, or like, get out, you know, like that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. <doesn't. laughs> So I think that's a great idea. Now, Desi, you talk with your men of purpose a lot about raising healthy children as well, right? Because you're a dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Proud dad.
Yeah. Proud dad. I love that that's part of your bio spiel. That's amazing. Yeah. I hear a lot, this is something I hear a lot, and I'm sure you do too, but this whole, okay, here's what I'm trying to do to reach my goals. I don't want to have to cook several different meals and make several different dishes for all the members of my family. My husband doesn't eat meat. My kids are super picky and they only want to eat mac and cheese, but I'm trying to eat lean proteins, whole grains, and, you know, fruits and veggies.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you help your clients balance that? Because I don't think that's sustainable, right? You agree with me on like making a platter each and every night is not going to stick around.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Nicole, that's the first hammer that I kind of throw down, where it's like, well, I ate this, but my spouse ate this and my kid. And I'm like, no. Like, this is going to stop like right now. So I think the thing that I really like to empower, and a good example of that is what I did this morning. I mean, for most of us who are parents within this concept, raising kids is hard and they are really picky at times and they know what they like, and then it changes the next day and you just don't know. So an example of what I did this morning was, you know, my wife and I had this really culture inspired dish that we love to have together. And so we had that. And then my little girl really loves bagels, cream cheese, and strawberries. So like, I made that for her, but I gave her a little bit of the chorizo and eggs that I made for my wife and I on the plate, just as more of a presentation of like, hey, if you're willing to try this, you're more than welcome. This is what mommy and daddy are eating. And so that's one thing that I try to do with my clients, to say like, hey, like, it is your responsibility, because they're a sponge. They're constantly just molding their world around your actions. And so you don't need to eat any different, but really it has more to do with like what you're presenting. So if that means that if your spouse really loves, let's just say fried chicken, like, okay, like, how do we implement fried chicken into your week-to-week menu plan? Like, okay, well, we got that. Or maybe we can also do some color and some salad and kind of cut it up in different ways for the kid. And so everyone's eating the same meal and it's more family style, versus like, I'm having a smoothie, my significant other is having salad, and like, it's just all over the place. And I just don't think that it molds a good family working atmosphere in regards to just behavioral change.
I agree with that. And I want to touch on something that you mentioned there, which is kind of training a palate. So yeah. Often with children, especially, but even adults, I mean, I've had women start working with me who say, I hate all vegetables. And my response is like, okay, I hear you, but we're going to work on that. Because it doesn't have to be this black and white kind of experience. I mean, taste buds can be trained, which is an oversimplification, but how do you go about doing that with small kids? You kind of touched on it with like sharing some of your breakfast on your daughter's plate this morning, but maybe when it comes to like introducing them to veggies or maybe different proteins, if a child doesn't like something initially, do you keep introducing it in new ways? Or are you sort of like, okay, I hear you, you don't like it. That's the end of the discussion.
That's such a great question. It's a marathon. It's a day-to-day intention of either introducing something to them that is going to be new or overall. I mean, by this time, like, you should know what your child likes. And so what I really like, and this is something that was taught to me, was practicing like, okay, if your child likes this certain food, then maybe you add that during a time where you're going to add something new so that something's comfortable for them, yet they might be able to try it. And, you know, we've really lucked out because my little girl really loves fruits and vegetables, and it's never even been an issue, but I think it's a bigger thing. And I feel like I just want to brag on myself, if that's okay. Like, I think that she has seen mom and dad eat fruits and vegetables and not say like, oh, I hate these, because the way that you talk about food really matters too. So if you tell them like, oh my gosh, broccoli tastes disgusting, what do you think is going to happen? So it has more to do with like how you present as the parent within that feeding relationship, and also just keeping it open, like not telling them you can have this and then like providing a reward, or you know, like you can't leave the table until you eat this. Really just sort of presenting like, hey, this is what mom and dad are having, we would really like you to try it. And then like what you had said, Nicole, I think is really huge too, of just doing it in different ways, cutting it in different ways, flavoring in different ways is going to be huge.
So Desi, based on your response, I take it you're not a fan of the clean plate club.
Oh, no, never. Never. It actually drives me nuts. And I mean, overall too, I think for the most part that it goes back from different family systems, but I'm a huge person on training not only my clients, but their families and their kids on more of the intuition of the body, like stopping when you're full. Because I don't like to spread the external message of like, this is how much you should eat. Like I'd rather empower you to give you the education and say, okay, provide me the feedback with how you did with that. And I think that's a little bit more of like the coaching in me. But I think it absolutely works with kids as well.
We're on the same page with that. I teach my clients over and over again, hunger and fullness cues. Your body knows more than you give it credit for. Yep. And oftentimes I'll use the analogy of like a small child, right? If a baby has had enough, they're just going to spit it out. They're not interested. It doesn't matter if the plate's cleaned or the bowl's empty. Like, they're going to tell you, hey, I've reached the threshold. I'm good. Thanks, mom. Thanks, dad.
Yeah. And that's funny that you say that, because I do the same thing. I'll bring it back to like, hey, do you remember when your child was being fed, whether it's breastfed or bottle fed, like they told you when they were hungry, right? And like, yeah, like same thing when they were full, like, yeah, like, okay, we have that same mechanism. We just have to connect with it again, because we've been told by external forces, families, media, whatever that is, like, this is how much you should eat, this is what you shouldn't eat. And it's like, well, hold on, like, says who?
Yes. Yes. Now, Desi, I want to get your, and this is kind of a personal just inquiry of mine, but it's also something I hear from a lot of my clients, and I'm not a parent. So I oftentimes feel a little bit like I cringe a little bit when I tell my clients that I think if you're trying to eat a healthy, well-balanced diet so that you can live a healthy, confident life, your kids should eat very similarly. Because you're doing this for health. Perhaps you have a weight loss goal in conjunction with that. But oftentimes, I think parents believe that kids can have, you know, tons of snacks and sweets and gummies and all those things, but that mom is the one that sits there eating the salad, or maybe dad is the one that sits there eating healthy. And sometimes I think it sounds obviously better and more experienced coming from someone like yourself who is a parent and who has done that. But how do you juggle the, yeah, I want my kid to experience snacks and fun foods and fun beverages, but I also want to teach them to eat healthy, well-balanced meals for the same reason that I do. Like, what would you say to a client that's struggling with that?
No, Nicole, I think it's the same. I think as professionals, not a whole lot changes. Obviously, within the parent to child relationship, there might be some different verbiage, but you're right on the money. I say the same things. I mean, I'm not a huge sweets person. Like, I'm more savory. So like chips and hummus are just like my jam. Like, I'll eat that any day of the week. My wife and my daughter they like chocolate. They're just huge chocolate people. So I think it points back to, like, there are times, because we have like a little drawer full of snacks. And so my daughter Rory will like go over there, like her little 3-year-old hand, and like try to open it and try to get some chocolate. And I'll ask her, like, hey, are you hungry? And if she says, yeah, like, okay, well, why don't we sit you down? We'll get a little bit of the chocolate, but I'm also going to get you some fruit. I'm going to get you some cheese, type of protein, and some crackers. And daddy's actually going to eat a snack with you if you're hungry. And then other times she just like, no, I just want chocolate. So it's like, you kind of balance between just really having the opportunity to connect with your child versus shame them with like, no, you can't eat that. Cause more often than not, when my daughter wants chocolate, she's also hungry. And this is also something that I've been trying to engineer too. And I think that is really cool. So her association to chocolate is my wife and my mother-in-law. So it's like, I'll ask her like, hey, do you miss Gigi? We call her grandmother. And she's like, yeah, I do. Like, okay, well, you know, maybe we should call her versus having some chocolate right now. And so trying to engineer that, because it's stuff that we do with our clients, because like there's this big thing that's coming across as like cravings, like everyone's addressing cravings. And I think it's really interesting too, because it's like all those things may be happening in addition to, you might also just have an association to that food that you don't know about, and that we just need to bring to light so that we have other options as well.
Wow, mind blown. So this is obviously exactly what I do with my clients, but I've never even thought about doing that with your children as well. Because, I mean, we talk all the time about separating true hunger from maybe emotional hunger, where it's just craving or desire, or I always have popcorn when I watch a movie, even if I'm already super full. Like, that's just what I do. I love that you're inquiring as to whether your daughter is actually truly hungry, or maybe if she's just attached like her grandmother or her mom and missing that to this food. Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it gets me really jazzed to see her become more aware, because it gives me hope with what we're seeing. Like, I don't know, this is totally off topic, but like obviously Weight Watchers just put out their kids app, right? And I'm like, why? But like, we're totally disempowering the family and the child to just start to trust their own cues. And if they don't trust their own cues, then the family needs to be educated and supported through it, versus like, oh, well, here's an app and here are some of the things you're gonna have to do to lose weight. And like, I just feel really sad, and it's going to create a lot of disconnection between people's selves and their bodies. And it's just, I feel hope when I do stuff like that, because it's like, all right, you know, my little girl is going to teach this to her family, and I'm preserving a legacy that means that we're going to connect with her body and connect with our feelings to the best of our ability.
Man, we need more people like you, Desi, because
I've
heard about the Weight Watchers app for children, and it kind of took me back to, not that long ago, I had a client on the podcast, and we did an episode called "Your Diet's Ruining Your Daughter's Relationship with Food," in where she explained how her mom, with the best of intentions, was trying to help her daughter lose weight because her pediatrician had said, hey, you know, we should focus on weight loss. So she started taking progress photos at age 10 and was put on her first diet at age 10. And she was sharing how it just so negatively impacted her relationship with food. And I think, like you alluded to, this external measure of validation, whether it's a tracking app or a photo or teaching kids about calories and that they need to be obsessed with how many they consume, it can be so detrimental.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough too, because so the way that I go about working with my clients is we'll bring about bigger food awareness. So I'll start them with like what I refer to as like the athlete's plate, right? And we'll go over like how to utilize balance and how to utilize carbs. But if someone needs more education, what I'll have them do is like, hey, start to track here, and we'll talk a little bit about what this brings up for you so that you have more food knowledge, so that in a year, 5, 10 years from now, you kind of know on a day-to-day basis, like what you're hungry for. So on that end, the way that I use it, I really try to empower and educate. But if it brings it back to the level of like doing that for kids and taking progress photos, and it's like, oh my gosh, like we're not creating a relationship with food that is based off of education or even empathy. It's based off of shame and reward. And it's like, all right, well, wait, what are we doing?
Exactly. And then I think we're just trained. We've now conditioned ourselves to look towards those external measures of control, whether it's the scale or the calorie counting app, to get the validation as we age. I see, I mean, grown women who still don't know how to listen to their body, can't trust their body because the scale's telling them they're up a pound, even though they did everything right. Maybe it's like water weight or hormone fluctuation, and they just can't trust it. Even though they feel fantastic, the scale is telling them that they're bad. And it's because it's been so patterned and conditioned.
Wow. It's tough. I just feel really sad. And I think the more that we have conversations like this, the more that we need to spread the message that there are other alternatives. Obviously we're going to have some families and parents that feel the need to do that. But I can really resonate with the client that you just talked about. I mean, what I first started in my career was eating disorder. So I'm hyper aware of not only just like the verbiage that I use with my parenting relationship, but also even in my coaching relationships too, of being aware of my role in it and being also aware of like the role of empathy throughout this process and education, because you're right. If we're looking at just the scale tells us literally nothing. Like there's so much more going on. And that's just something that I always try to make sure that I implement with my clients to make sure that we're looking at the bigger picture and what the bigger goal is.
Desi, we're friends, but we're going to be best friends after this because I'm learning so much about your coaching style and I'm just on board with all of it. The one thing that you keep coming back to is this emotionality component of behavior change and the mindset component, the psychology. And that's something that I just preach till I'm blue in the face because I think we can focus on macronutrients and micronutrients all we want, but if we're not changing the messages that go with the relationship that we have with food, I don't think we're actually creating true lasting behavior change. And it sounds like you do a lot of that work with your clients. Do you find that people struggle with the mental and emotional aspect more than they do the like, wait, I should eat protein. Okay.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we kind of know this is the nature of the business. You know, if I'm speaking to my new best friend, Nicole, the entrepreneur, we kind of know that the nature of the business is that people come and people go and sometimes they're not a right fit. And I'll say that the people that have not stuck with me at least past 3 month mark have really struggled with the emotional intelligence aspect that I really try to preach because, and that's okay too. Like some people just aren't ready, but when you start to examine some of these more stories that you've told yourself throughout your life, like it's important to also take a look at the other aspects of how those stories impact your loved ones. And coming from someone who's a family person, like I'm always putting that on my clients to say like, okay, so if you're looking for better work and family life balance, what does you coming home stressed as hell do for your family system? And then we have a conversation about it. And the really great thing that I love about my clients is they've been so open to that emotional intelligence piece. They've been so open to vulnerability, so much so that it's like, okay, the vehicle is nutrition. That's what we're going to continue to drive. And at the same time, like, oh, damn, Des, I think that I do need to go see a therapist. I think there are some things that I really, some past stories that I've told myself that I really need to examine. And that's just one of those things, like it really just warms my heart to see them be so strengthened and courageous to say like, okay, this hurts, let's go examine this versus oftentimes what we're told is like, mask it, distract it. No, it's a bad feeling. And I'm a huge Brené Brown person and I love her work. And I love the aspect of empathy and making sure that we're just curious about our thoughts and our behaviors so that we don't judge them, which takes us down that shame cycle.
Yes. Nobody can see this, but my face just lit up when you said Brené Brown. I'm the biggest fan ever. Yes. Yes. One question that popped when you were talking is, so obviously separating out this true physiological hunger from just this emotional piece, what do you encourage your clients to do, Desi, if they're acknowledging, I'm not actually hungry, but my desire, that itch is to open the fridge and to solve my loneliness or my boredom or my stress with food? What would be the alternative that you might suggest?
Oh my gosh. So I love doing this exercise. it's, to me, it's just so mind blowing just to see their faces kind of pop. So there's this book called The Power of Habit by, I think it's Charles Duhigg. So you should put this in the show notes. It's a really great book. Okay. But he talks about the power of habit and what happens with human psychology. And so the way that, if I can explain it the best of my ability, just verbally, is that within the habit circle, there, it starts with a cue. So something that triggers it, right? And then it goes to the action, right? So for me, like the example that he gives that I resonate with is like biting my fingernails. Like I'm just horrible. I do it all the damn time. So recognizing the trigger or the cue for me is like something that is exciting. Like I even started doing it right now as I'm talking about this. But something that's exciting or nerve wracking. So that's the cue. The action is me biting my nail. But every action that we take, any behavior has a reward system. The really great thing about the human mind is that we can replace that action item and still get that reward. So for me, if I'm looking for comfort, then I can also acknowledge how many times that I do it. So this brings about awareness. What I have my clients do is like, let's say it's nighttime eating. It's like, Des, I can't stop eating ice cream. I just don't know what's going on. It's like, okay, cool. For the next week, let's start to track like what's actually going on. So start to be aware of what the cue is. And sometimes it just might be like 8 p.m. decompression time, TV's on, this is what I do. Like, okay, so that's the cue. So the action is eating the ice cream or going to the fridge to start. So I always ask them like, what are you trying to receive from this? What's the reward system? And more often than not, it's like comfort, decompression, just feeling just better. Like it's almost my nighttime routine. So it's a little bit more of an empowering tool to say, okay, those reward systems are really great. Now, what are some other things outside of food, outside of ice cream that can help you feel comforted? Well, a nice hot shower might work, or like some music, or just going to read to my kid. And I'm like, okay, now that we are aware of what's going on, now this is where the accountability steps in. So do you want to just distract and decompress in the same way that you have been? And you know that this has likely caused maybe some blood sugar issues or maybe some sleep deprivation, like whatever that is. Now that you have been empowered to know this education, what do you want to do with it? And like, that's like the really cool thing where we're talking about behavioral change, where people are like, like, shit, I can do this.
That's the power is mine. Yeah.
All right. That's something that I really love to use because it's so powerful to see them like, oh my gosh, this, I'm not just like a slave to this. Like I can do this.
Yes. It's something I call food and mood journaling. And yeah. I'm totally going to drop that book in the show notes so that everybody can check it out. But essentially it's, what am I feeling right now? What is that cue like you just described? And then yep. What's the salve? What's the solution that I'm currently reaching for, which may or may not be truly helping me solve the problem?
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Desi, you work primarily with males and I work primarily with females, but based on our discussion today, our coaching process is very, very similar. Mm-hmm. So if I can just pick your brain a little bit for everybody tuning in, what are the most, I won't give you a number because that's, I'm sure you could go on for days, but what are the characteristics of your most successful clients? The people who just knock it out of the park, not without bumps and barriers along the way, but they just keep coming back. What are their characteristics if you had to kind of describe it in a nutshell?
That's so hilarious that you asked that question, because I told you before I hopped on that I was on a call and we were literally just talking about like, who are your best clients? And the way that I can describe it is my best clients are me. They are someone who's willing to become more emotionally aware with what's going on. Someone who is very perfectionistic and competitive, yet also able to take feedback. Someone who recognizes that they put a lot on themselves and at the same time that they have support. And so those types of people are really balanced in the way that they want to do really well and they intend to do really well. And sometimes they can get in their own way, but with feedback and coaching and better communication, sky's the limit for them. And so my best clients are able to take feedback. They're able to be honest about what's going on. And I think that speaks to just the rapport that we build with one another, because I think being able to be vulnerable is a really courageous act. And when you trust someone, big things can happen. So I think that my best clients are able to be vulnerable within that process and to learn and to educate their families. My best clients are me.
I love that. And EQ, right? Emotional intelligence. Yeah. You keep coming back to that. I think that's huge because I have some clients do journaling and you're right. There are clients who are very resistant to that and it's vulnerable. You're kind of like digging in deep there, doing the dirty work. And that doesn't feel comfortable for a lot of people. But I do think it's a huge requirement if you actually want to create true lasting behavior change.
Yeah. Yeah. It's huge. And it's something that I really enjoy because it's really important, especially just again, I work mostly with men who either have families currently or want to have families. So like I'm already getting them on the train of like, hey, like this is your role, trying to practice better emotional intelligence, trying to make sure that obviously nutrition is a huge parameter with what we're trying to achieve. And at the same time, you're not going to do this perfectly, but you're also willing to get a coach. And so this is why you're going to be successful.
Now, Desi, one final question before you tell everybody how they can come find you and follow you. Sure. I shared a photo of you when I said, hey, I'm going to be recording a podcast interview with this guy. And you were in the kitchen. You were wearing an apron. You were like arm around your wife. And a couple of my clients were like, okay, the only question I have is how can I get my husband to help me cook like that? And I don't know that that's an easy one to answer, but anything you have to say to speak to that question.
Come be my client. I'm just kidding.
I'll send their husbands over to you.
Yeah, please do. Please do. And this is just based off of market research and something that I'm really excited about as I'm seeing that there's this big push for more relational equality in the family and husbands are doing more shopping, they're doing more cleaning, they're doing more cooking. And so I think the best way that I like to go about it, and I think what most men would probably resonate with is just empowerment, right? So some of them might not know how to do this and that's where resources come into play. But at the same time, like also recognizing the ways in which they've helped out, which is not like the, in past times, like, oh, the women does the cooking, the cleaning, getting the kids ready, but really empowering them to take a bigger role in just like getting your kids ready to go to school and then letting that spill into possibly doing more of the shopping, more of the meal planning, and then they get in the kitchen more. And so, like, I love to just make it a family feature with just everyone being together because you're going to remember that. And if you can really glean on those experiences, you're going to want to cook again. You're going to want to do these things again because it was fulfilling. Like last night, I did a little bit of content videos for some things I want to do for like tailgate. And we ended up just having a huge dance party. And like, I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life. And it had everything to do with me being in the kitchen. So, So for the ladies listening, getting your guys back in the kitchen, make it fun. Like get some wine out. You know, if you don't drink seltzer, whatever, throw some music on and just dance. I promise you he'll come back.
Team effort. I love that. It's reminding me, actually, a client I spoke with earlier this week, she's creating a loose menu of what she feels confident eating, when she's eating out, when she wants to eat at home. And she said, Nicole, I actually ran this by my husband. And he said, I would be more than happy to help cook so long as you have the recipes and like the foods for me. He was like, I love the cooking. I just don't love the planning. And so together, they dynamic duo. Now it's working really well. But she had to initially open up that line of communication.
Yeah. And the really great thing about like checking with that client in 6 months to a year, I guarantee that their relationship has skyrocketed because they're connecting with food. Again, I'm super biased because of what we do, but I think food is just so fantastic and it's hard to hear people talk about what they should or shouldn't be doing. And it's like, that's not what this is about. It's about connecting again.
So much more than fear, right? It's fun. It's social. It's pleasure. It's it's so much. And I'm glad we're helping our clients realize that.
Yeah.
So Desi, how can people find you on social media? Where can they come to get all of your awesome free content and amazing value that you deliver each and every day?
I appreciate that. So you can find me on Instagram. My handle is FitDadsCoach. I am there to empower my fellow man of purpose, the guy that has given everything for their family, their careers, and lost their own health in the process. So I'm there to empower you guys to get back in the kitchen and to be really great role models for your family. And then you can also find me in my Facebook group where I'm doing a whole lot more community-based things, more lives, more teaching, all those things in the Men of Purpose Nutrition Facebook group.
I love that. Yes, go find Desi, go join his Facebook group. And Desi, thank you so much for allowing me to steal some of your time today to share your story, but also the awesome work you're doing with your Men of Purpose.
Oh, I appreciate that. Everything that we just talked about literally just brought a bunch of joy in my life. So thank you.
Likewise.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com where you can sign up for my weekly emails where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.